emotional farewells across the country to those who died in that attack, that terror attack in Pulwama. And it's really been, the nation has really come together today to thank the families and to express their support in every possible way possible. We've had people coming out offering to support the families, to support the children of those who died, and to do whatever they can to help in any possible manner. On this particular program, we're going to be taking a look at some of the other developments that have happened today. The all-party meeting, what possibly comes after that, in some incidents of trouble in parts of the country, what can we do to prevent that from happening? And then we will turn our attention with the range of experts we've got, and we have assembled in this room 7 or 8 of some of the top strategic and defense thinkers we know to try and come up with some of the ideas, evaluate India's options from a number of different possibilities: the military options, the diplomatic options, and the economic options. What can possibly be done? Well, let's just start off first with the all-party meeting that happened earlier. This really is what happened. Let's try and take stock of what India's politicians have said. And it was again an occasion for India to come forward in a united way to say all politicians, all political parties stand together. India has been attacked. India is going to respond. Well, let me just quickly go across to Naresh Gujral now, who was one of the people who was there at their all-party meeting. Mr. Gujral, before I introduce my other guests and we start looking at some of the options, could you give us a sense of what happened at the all-party meeting? What were the sentiments that were expressed, and what perhaps, I mean, anything which was confidential, actually, we won't expect you to share that. But in a nutshell, what was the essence of what happened at the all-party meeting?
Vikram, like all Indians, everybody was anguished and everybody expressed their total solidarity with the armed forces. And at the same time, we all felt that there should be no party politics at this time. We should speak in one voice. Our unity and integrity is under threat, and we must stand united in this hour of grief.
Mr. Gujral, you know, this has been a special series of a big fight that I've been doing because we've been focusing on the general elections and we've been saying, oh, let's take a look at all the events and how it could possibly affect the general elections, which are just about 100 days away. So a major, major development like this and a major, major incident like this, I guess by now, 2 days later, people are questioning, is this going to be something which is going to have political implications one way or the other? Will there be political sniping that will kick in a couple of days' time? Or is there genuinely going to be some sort of all-party unity on this question?
Vikram, this is a proxy war on our country. We have faced this situation before. I come from Punjab. Punjab faced it for 15 long years. It is ISI-sponsored, it is Pakistan-sponsored, and we saw how 50,000 innocent lives were lost in Punjab. Eventually, we were able to overcome this. But if you remember, at one stage, every Sikh was looked at with suspicion. And also, unfortunately, an election was fought on this issue, in a way implying as if this every Sikh was a terrorist. I hope this kind of thing is never repeated again in this country. There is an attempt by Pakistan and ISI to radicalize our youth in Kashmir. They want to radicalize their minds. They want to radicalize their hearts.
Yeah.
And we have to ensure that an average Kashmiri, an overwhelming Kashmiri, the amount of Kashmiris, they stand with India. They should not be looked at with suspicion. So it should never be, we should never try to take political advantage of this situation.
But that, it's interesting you say that, because while the all-party meeting was going on and the expressions of unity are coming, and it's really heartening for 2 days or 3 days now, India United, one of the subjects that's been trending on social media. But at the same time, there is a certain amount of tension. We've seen outbreaks of tension in some parts. There were some reprehensible and absolutely shameful comments by some, Kashmiri students in some parts of the country where they have, come out and said comments about Pulwama, which obviously infuriated people. But equally shocking, there have been incidents of violence where innocents perhaps have been targeted. So is this something which the all parties, I know, Umar Abdullah does, met the Home Minister. The Home Minister has said, we're going to try and ensure that peace and stability is maintained in all parts of the country. Is this something that came up at the all-party meeting?
Yes, this did come up. And the Home Minister assured us that he has given very strict instructions to the police to crush all such forces, irrespective of the party that they belong to, including his own party. In fact, he was very forthright. He said he will not spare anybody. And I do hope that this kind of atmosphere will prevail and we will not allow this to surface.
Right. One last question on the all-party meeting. Is there anything specific that the government, any message that the government had for the opposition and anything that the opposition had to say to the government at this all-party meeting?
Welcome. Everybody is very angry. Everybody felt that there must be some kind of retaliation. But at the same time, we all felt we should leave it to the armed forces, we should leave it to the government. They know when and where to strike and what best to do. But yes, there is a lot of anger.
A lot of anger, and there should be some retaliation. But later in this program, of course, we're going to take a look at some of the options that there are. Any assurances that the government gave to the other parties? Did it say it will continue to keep them in confidence and try and make this an all-party, more meetings?
Look, the assurance that we all wanted was that this should not take a communal color. And there we were reassured by the Home Minister that he will not allow this to happen.
All right. All right, Naresh Gujral, thank you so much for joining us. Somebody who was there at that all-party meeting. Well, I'm just going to go across to my colleague Sunil to also get some sense of what he's hearing in the aftermath of the all-party meeting and what is likely to be the developments in the next few days and weeks. Sunil, what are you hearing after the all-party meeting? We heard Naresh Gujral giving us a sense of it.
Vikram, you couldn't get a better first-hand account from Naresh Gujral than from somebody who was just observing that meeting. The fact, of course, is that the government wants to get the opposition as well as all parties to speak in a united voice. That is why even on the resolution, they agreed to drop the question about, the central government to take whatever steps and support the government. They agreed on the fact that we should just focus today on our security forces and condemn the attack, as well as, blame cross-border terrorism without naming any specific country. So broadly, I think there was a broad consensus amongst most political parties. They spoke in a united voice. They wanted the Prime Minister to actually call all the presidents of parties and show that India speaks in one voice against terror. How that will play out, because we've already seen a multi-pronged approach, both on the economic front, even though it might not make too much of sense, but the most favored nation status has been removed. The other aspect, of course, is internationally, where they have put up a huge diplomatic offensive against Pakistan, and as well as informed the Chinese government, as well as the Chinese ambassador, about the concern that they have, especially relating to Jaish-e-Mohammed and the definition of terrorism. They look forward to the international community to go ahead and give it support. In the next few days, we will definitely see and step up in the offensive. This is election season, Vikram, as you're well aware. And it's in that backdrop that the government does not want to be found wanting, wants to be seen as proactive. And it's in that context now that the government of India will be looking at various options. As they said, all options are open. And those who have been responsible for these incidents will pay for a heavy price.
All right, Sunil, thanks for joining us for that perspective. We'll keep a track of what specifically is going to happen. But I just want to welcome, as I said, we have assembled a panel which I hope we're going to try and have some sort of almost like a brainstorming session around some of the options that are actually open right now, military, diplomatic, economic, and let's see if all the wise minds that are around this table will perhaps help shed some light on what could actually happen. So let me just welcome Lieutenant General Raj Kadian, former Deputy Chief of Army Staff, Kamar Aga, well-known defense analyst, Shama Mohammed from the Congress Party, Brigadier Sandeep Thapar, defense analyst, Rahul Jalali, senior journalist, a lot of experience in defense matters, Ashok Thakur, a leader of the BJP, is with us as well. And we have Sheel Khan Sharma, former Secretary General of SAARC and former Indian envoy to Austria. So on all the fronts that I said, defense, political, diplomatic, economic, we've got some of the people who can help us make some sense of way to go forward. But before I come to you and we start looking at those various Indian options, as I said, let's just turn our attention to something else that's been happening for the last 24 hours or 30 hours, which are disturbing. And I said incidents of violence that have happened in some parts. We've heard the Home Minister coming out very strongly and saying this should not happen. The targeting of innocents is not something that should actually be permitted. Now, the former Chief Minister of Jammu and Kashmir, Umar Abdullah, went and met Rajnath Singh also and was given a certain number of assurances. But yesterday I did speak to Umar Abdullah. I spoke to him about all that has been happening, both the incidents of certain Kashmiri students seeming to celebrate or seeming to make really insensitive and shameful remarks about the terror attack, and also the question of ensuring that innocents are secure anywhere in the country. Any Indian should be safe and secure in any parts of the country. What can be done to assure that? This is what Umar Abdullah said to me yesterday. Right. Umar, I saw you tweeting a little earlier in the day that, that states in other parts of the country need to worry a little bit about Kashmiri students who are there and ensure that they are fine. And of course, there's no exception but that is correct. But perhaps the message also should be sent. We've seen some Kashmiri students in other parts of the country in various educational institutions have come out with what can only be described shockingly insensitive, if not absolutely reprehensible, comments on social media and elsewhere. If that happens, then there will be consequences.
Absolutely, there is no place for comments like those. You have no business studying in colleges and universities in other parts of the country. In all probability, taking advantage of scholarship schemes made available by the government of India in various names. And then going on about and celebrating the deaths of 40 plus people. As I said, I mean, there is no justification in any religion for celebration of death. And so, yes, while on the one hand, I have appealed to the Home Minister to ensure that there is no trouble, in the same breath, I will also appeal to these students studying in institutions in the rest of the country to please not do or say anything that will invite trouble, particularly for those students who have stayed far away from trouble, whose only interest is in acquiring a proper education and making a future for themselves.
So if it is India united, we've got to make sure that message also goes out. Just want to get, maybe a couple of you, Ashok and Sharma, maybe you just want to comment, and I'm then going to keep going to other guests. How do we ensure that a certain amount of unity is maintained? Ashok, maybe you want to start first. How do you ensure that a certain amount of unity is maintained and we have a united response to this? We don't start fighting among each other, but that, I guess at the end of the day, that's what the enemies of India would want.
See, this is the time to, I think, keep patience. We understand the anguish between the people, but anti-national forces, they may provoke, they may try to take the advantage of these situations. So I think up to this time, people have done shown a lot of maturity, and they will maintain it, and they will not allow to take advantage of these forces.
Shama, you also optimistic about that? I mean, given that this is election season and temperatures are up, and obviously people are very angry at what happened. There is that sense of rage. We've seen those protest pictures. It's justified, I guess, to be angry. It's justified to be upset. It's justified to be pained, to be, to say that something should be done and how can incidents like this be happened as long as we don't take it out on other Indians.
That's what I'm saying. I'm angry. I'm hurt, I'm very angry that this keeps happening. But like Mr. Gujral said, we can't take it out on Indians. We have to take it out on the perpetrators, that is the Pakistanis. Even this government there, who keeps Hafiz Saeed, who keeps Azhar Mahmood, they can just roam around freely. So of course we need to, and we need to see to it that, yes, there is radicalization which is happening. We need to look into that. And like Mr. Gandhi came out yesterday, Rahul Ji came out yesterday and said that we are with the government of the day. We'll stand with them with whatever action, and we are united in this fight against terrorism in our country. We need to take stern action against Pakistan. It has to be isolated, sanctions economically in all forms, because this cannot go on. We cannot be that our soldiers keep dying. You know, this is not done. This time we say, this is not done. We are not going to take any more of this from Pakistan.
All right. So what can actually be done? I think it's time now we turn our attention to that for a while and get all of you to brainstorm. But I also want to welcome a really, really special guest joining us from Washington, Jilia Chair, who's former chief of staff and policy coordinator to Prime Minister and Minister of Defense, Ehud Barak. So it's great to have you with us, sir, you know, sharing some light on what is a very difficult situation right now. In India, a lot of people keep saying, I was doing a program yesterday as well, where again we got some, you know, advice from a former Israeli foreign minister. Your advice and your suggestion to how India should deal with the situation, because today, here we are in India, looking at a neighbor who's sponsoring these terror attacks. It's a nuclear-powered nation, which has its own limitations. I guess it imposes its own limitations in some way. What do you think India should do right now? What would be your advice?
Well, allow me first to extend my condolences to the Indian people in general and to the families in particular. I believe that this is exactly what the terrorists would like to see. That's chaos and internal dispute between the Indians themselves in terms of how to respond to this despicable attack. And the question now is how to contain in both scope and scale the response of India into that context of terrorist attack. There was not, of course, the first, and you could assume that it would not be the last. Having said that, you need to take into consideration the special and important role that Pakistan now has vis-a-vis the United States in the American strategy to stop or at least subside its involvement in Afghanistan. So this is a very delicate moment in which you need to assure that this vicious round of terror, retaliation, response, and so on and so forth,
right,
does not spark a larger dispute, a larger conflict, and a larger bloodshed.
Right. I'm just going to ask you to pause for a minute because, you know, news just coming out right now. We've just seen the Finance Minister Arun Jaitley has just put out a tweet. So when we're talking about the possible actions, military, diplomatic, and economic, well, here's the start of the economic steps. India has, of course, withdrawn the MFN status to Pakistan yesterday. But now India has hiked the basic customs duty on all goods exported from Pakistan to India to 200% with immediate effect. So that's a really, really strong step. Now, you can only have steps like that being taken and 200% customs duty being imposed once that MFN has been. And let's remember, Pakistan has never extended that MFN status to India. So, you know, that level of parity. But that clearly is the first major economic step that has now been taken. All goods being exported from Pakistan to India now have 200% customs duty. So that's the first step being done. Quick reaction from anybody to that. Ashok Sharma, do you want to say something to that? I mean, it's a sensible step, you think?
Yes, but, you know, it's a good thing. But we have to also see that, you know, even in this most favored nation, there is land route, sea route. I mean, 2001, we stopped the land. but it was happening through the sea. And then it has UAE through via Singapore. Yeah. So that, the trade, I guess, happens. Ashokji,
some of the gaps that will have to be plugged.
That
shouldn't
gaps
be.
Have to be plugged.
I think it is a beginning, and you will see so many actions in later stages.
And I believe we should put pressure on the international community to put sanctions against Pakistan. It is not just, okay, we need to get teach this lesson.
You just referred to something that I've been actually tweeting about for the last 2 days. But all right, I'm going to come to that also. Just want to come back to you before I come to my panel out here. You are saying, yes, it's a difficult situation. Now in a similar sort of a situation, we've often seen Israel, for example, being able to use, you know, military action in some form or the other, coercive military action. I guess your job has been slightly easier in that by the fact that the people whom you've been confronting are not necessarily nuclear-armed states, so it's somewhat easier. It's okay to say El Mossad's going in and getting X, Y, Z when they're not, when they don't have nuclear weapons. So I just want to come back again to some lessons that you might have and suggestions for India from you.
Well, in my opinion, you need to design a package that is a multidimensional package of sanctions, of political actions, of international warfare against this kind of despicable terrorism, and combine that with with any other military action that would be limited in size and scope, in light of both of you, India and Pakistan, being nuclear powers, so that it would not deteriorate into a larger scale conflict. I believe that the combination of economic, political, military, and other actions that are not necessarily to be spoken about in the media, I believe that all these should be very well and thoroughly looked at in your government, and of course keep the intelligence very alert to continuous attacks by the Palestinians, by the Pakistanis and their terrorist clans.
All right, sir. Well, thank you so much for joining us with that perspective. It was great talking to you, Chair, that joining us from Washington. Thank you so much, sir, for being with us. A package. That's what he said. Have a package of actions. And I'm going to take the liberty to start off this discussion. I'm going to throw it open to all of you. Please feel free to come in with your own ideas. If it is a package, what are the possibilities? Let me just list some of them out for you, and then we can discuss them. So, A, obviously, the military option, the military actions that can be spoken about. This is something which I guess a lot of public opinion is talking about. Politically, this is one of the things that does resonate. But there are questions and around how much of this is actually possible, for the simple reason, as I just said, Pakistan is a nuclear power. So there's not that, there's so far you can go and no further. So military options, of course, could be a surgical strike across the line of control. As we just saw, it could be shelling across the line of control. You could have actions against terror leaders and terror groups, the covert option, as it is sometimes called, airstrikes on terror infrastructure across the line of control. The planes don't even have to necessarily cross. So these are some of the military options that possibly exist. And in a couple of minutes, actually I'll list it for you, and then we can discuss all of these in turns. Diplomatically, what are India's options? Diplomatically, you can talk about the isolation of Pakistan. This is something we've been trying to do for a long time, but perhaps the time is particularly appropriate. A lot of countries seem to be coming out and accepting this. Isolate Pakistan, diplomatically isolate Pakistan, perhaps use the option of other countries which are also facing cross-border terrorism. Talk to Pakistan's allies, Saudi Arabia, the MBS is coming to India, have a conversation with them, talk to UAE, try and talk to China. I'm not sure that China is going to do anything, but try talking to them. So that's another option. Talk to Pakistan's allies and see if they're willing to help. And then, of course, if India wants, there's always the slightly stronger step of snapping diplomatic ties altogether. So these are some of the diplomatic options. Economic options. We've already seen one of those economic options being exercised, the raising of customs duty. But here's something else. The Financial Action Task Force meeting in Paris, starting on the 17th of February. Is that something that India can do? Pakistan's already grey-listed there, remember. grey-listed. And China didn't actually block it for once. It allowed Pakistan to be grey-listed. And you can't really have one country blocking something out there. Can the Financial Action Task Force be used to get a package of sanctions or some sort of financial curbs put on Pakistan till it stops helping, supporting, financing terrorism? Well, it's something certainly for India to consider. That leads to the possibility of exploring economic sanctions in a more general sense on Pakistan and seeing how we can get countries to come together to deal with it. The idea, of course, is to have some sort of a economic price to Pakistan. The financial and the economic weakness of Pakistan may be more. That may be well where they're more vulnerable than from a military point of view, which is why that becomes an interesting option. All right, range of options. Why don't I go this way and get everyone to who hasn't spoken to come in. Jinnah Qadian, why don't you start?
Vikram,
what do you think are the options?
All these actions will add on to the pressure on Pakistan and to put Pakistan on the dock. But what we need to do, the need of the hour today, seeing the public anger, is to do something which is tangible and visible. Some of these actions may not be seen by the public in real terms, like the IMF status and all. That can only happen with a military action. With that option is very much open and should be utilized. What should be done, when, where, and how, we leave it to the experts. That is not to be in any case discussed. Yeah, crossing of the line of control physically by troops is something which should be the last option, because firstly, the novelty is not there. We have already said and done that in the surgical strike. But the target chosen, whatever they decide to choose, should be high-value target, which has an impact. Aim is to have a psychological ascendancy on Pakistan to give them a conviction that they cannot get away with it, and we have something more in store. Secondly,
so you're saying it's worth crossing and doing that if it is with a high value target as opposed to, you know, a launch pad or some of the other things. Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying, firstly, in my view, target should not be confined to only the POK. A launch pad, all these training camps and all, what is there? Two tents in the jungle, you destroy them, that's more for publicity. Nothing happens on the ground. This high-value target should be deeper inside. We don't need to send the troops. We have the means and methods by air force, by missiles, by rockets, long-range artillery. That is the one that should be used.
So reading between the lines, directly target the Jaish-e-Mohammed and directly target the Lashkar-e-Taiba.
Absolutely.
Muritsky, Bahawalpur, those are the places.
The second in this
although
respect,
they may not necessarily, I mean, they are aware that this could happen, so they may not be sitting there right now.
No, they may not be. They will be alert. We will also suffer casualty, but that casualty suffering is worth it than losing people sitting in the vehicles. The second thing we must do, which again more symbolic, the ceasefire that came into being in 2003 at Pakistan's behest because they had run out of ammunition. They requested for it, which is not being followed. It is a shame. We should officially say that ceasefire is hereby revoked. So that it gave.
So the possibility of artillery shelling across the line of control, which was inflicting a certain amount of damage on Pakistan.
It was. And they didn't have enough ammunition. That's why they asked for the ceasefire.
And by the way, they can't necessarily.
We should revoke it officially.
Given the economic problems out there and given the possibility for, I'm going to come to the Afghan and the Iran factor, which may also be something to consider. Right, sir. Kamran Alan, what's your take on the various baskets?
You know, I believe, you know, of course, military action would be taken very soon. Prime Minister have already given instruction to the army, they're preparing for it. There's a tremendous pressure from public also to take some action against them. I don't want to discuss. I think, you know, we should also talk. Pakistan at the moment, you know, is facing serious economic crisis. We should contact World Bank and IMF that they should not grant any loan to Pakistan till the militancy is continuing.
Those are economic sanctions. And in your view, those economic... let's just understand the Pakistani economic vulnerability. Like, take the step that has just been announced, customs duty on Pakistani goods. Now, people will say Pakistan exports, if I remember right, about something like $400 million or thereabouts of exports. But $400 million of exports, which is suddenly drying up, because we're 200% imports, nobody's buying those Pakistani goods. $400 million drying up. For Pakistan in its present economic position has a price. But you're right, IMF and World Bank has a far higher price.
They are totally dependent on, at the moment, you know, on IMF loan. Because Arabs can't afford to give further money. Oil prices are down. Saudi Arabia, UAE are engaged in Yemen. So therefore, the
MBS is arriving there very shortly. I'm sure he's going to have a lot of... They're going to ask him for a lot of money.
He's already there. Yes, I mean,
we don't know. So, I'm saying we don't know what he's going to be announcing right now. But presumably they're expecting he's going to sign a big check or two big checks.
That's what they
want. Second thing.
That's what they want. That's what they're hoping for. Yes. And he's coming here next. So it's time for us to perhaps tell MBS that if you're signing lots of checks.
We've got to tell him not to do it.
Tell him not
also,
to do it.
Also hint at the repercussions if we can raise the ante for him. What repercussions would there be?
If he signs a big check
exactly.
to Pakistan.
Exactly. But that apart, I mean, if I may, you
yeah.
say...
Can I finish?
Yes, please, please. Go ahead.
You know, they don't have much money to invest in Pakistan. They will spend, they will give some money, you know, for refinery they are promising. They're promising with India also. They've promised a lot of money to invest in America, but nothing, you know, come through so far. Second thing, you know, President Donald Trump has said that... Pakistan should eradicate militancy from its soil after this incident, you know. So we should also tell Pakistan not to resume its military and economic aid to Pakistan till they fulfill his, demand, okay. you know. Third thing, you know, we should also form an alliance of all those countries which are victim of terrorism like Iran, Afghanistan, Central Asian republics, as well as Bangladesh, you know. Which is also accusing Pakistan. All these countries are accusing Pakistan.
I think we should start
negotiation, take actions, you know, take some initiative on this ground, you know, because all these countries are individually suffering from militancy coming from the Pakistan, you know, or Afghanistan in that.
I think it's interesting you say, and if I could just come to you, Mr. Sharma, for a minute. What he just now said about you know, talking to Iran and talking to other countries. The latest statements that are emerging out of Iran right now, because let's remember, Iran just lost 27 people. The latest statement, and this is just coming out on Twitter and other things, but for example, the IRGC chief commander's latest reaction, he said, Jaish-e-Adal terrorists are being supported by Pakistani security forces. It has sheltered them. It knows their whereabouts. If it fails to punish them, Iran will do so. And that's a rather strong statement coming from the Iranians right now. And if you're talking about Pakistan being under pressure, we know the Afghanistan has been saying this almost as long as India has been saying it, that all the terrorism which is coming and all the Afghans who are dying because of Pakistan-sponsored terrorism. Now, Iran is saying the same thing. So there is, as Kamal Sir was just now saying, the possibility to have a three-front situation for Pakistan building up, like pressure on all sides.
Yes, certainly. Certainly, this our working with Iran is very logical at this juncture. And they are suffering from this Sunni terrorism. Actually, in southern Iran, near Zahdan, near Pakistan border, there has been some incidents in recent days.
27 people were killed. That's what I just said the Iranians are responding to.
So Iran is worried. And we have to, and this point that Iran is making is very important. We have to effectively mention this. This business about that it is a homegrown thing and all, this is complete cock and bull story. The man who was involved, his version, Adil's, whatever he said in the video, it indicates clearly that a secondary school student or college dropout cannot write like that. It's a very complicated statement which has been read
but
to him by ISI.
But he is from Kashmir. The boy is from Kashmir.
Nee, but the boy is from Kashmir.
Kashmir.
But what he's saying,
I agree
it
with
is
you
beyond
on that.
Him.
But if you can radicalize now, which was almost
no,
finished.
That radicalization theory is bunk. It is Pakistan who is giving words into their mouth.
No, no.
And
but
this business
but
of radicalization.
But if he has to commit suicide, it is radicalization.
But
no,
I agree with the radicalization thing is important. Let's forget when MBS is coming out here.
That's
one
right.
other
we need to
talk
to him about. The Prime Minister has to speak to him about spread of Wahhabism. You know,
Shama's point is valid. That what
is,
one of the things that Saudi Arabia has been doing.
It has been doing that. You know, it's done it to Indonesia.
Radicalization. And there is
not
a rise in radicalization in the Kashmir Valley, which is one of the factors that
but,
makes
you know,
it.
Vikram, it's not just here. It's Indonesia, Malaysia, everywhere. It's gone up to everywhere. Indonesia,
see,
Malaysia, Philippines.
Is a representation.
You know,
Shama,
Philippines.
Can I come in
sorry,
on that?
Yeah.
Adil is a representation of the radicalization you're talking about in the valley. The fact is that it's not that low as you're talking about, or as you suggest. I know the situation there. The radical element is quite widespread in South Kashmir. And we have been talking about countermeasures against them, but we've not really had a model except pay lip sympathy to something called Kashmiriyat, which has never been defined. I think this is one time you have to take on growth of radicalism in the Valley. You have enough instruments to combat it. Secondly, this is where you put pressure on Saudis.
That's exactly what
Shama
is saying.
Money, but that's where a lot of money comes from. The ideology.
But that's exactly what Shama is saying. I think that you must talk to the Saudi Arabians and stop the spread of Wahhabism.
I mean, they've spread it
and
all
if you
over.
Don't stop the spread of Wahhabism in the Kashmir Valley and other areas, and if you continue to support Pakistan and the spread of
Also, we have to look at our own models. We have enough models in Kashmir to stop the spread of Wahhabism, to counter
there is a money coming in.
But I think the money comes from Saudi Arabia.
The money comes from Saudi Arabia,
so you've got to stop that money.
It's funding all over the world.
I do not think we are doing enough in, in the Valley.
We're not.
Today, about 60% of the youth are between 14 and 25 years of age in the Valley. They are children of the conflict. They have seen, since their come out of the house, they've seen guns, they've seen a cordon and search. I don't think the government is doing enough. We need to do more, because Pakistan is doing its bit to make sure that they
support. And I think one of the things to be kept in mind, and Ashok, let me just come to you on this. I think one of the things that has to be kept in mind is, look, there will be a price that Pakistan has to pay. And it will presumably pay that price. Maybe Pakistan will even stop cross-border terrorism under concerted action if all of these steps start to take and the world community comes in. I mean, they haven't stopped it for a long time, but maybe the price of this will go up. Maybe they'll be forced to take some step. At that time, there is going to be a time when we have to turn our own attention to our internal issues and our internal problems and try and figure out how do we get a solution. This may not be the time to really focus entirely on that, but at some time we have to.
We have worked a lot at the internal part of this, and I think a few days back, one of the districts declared terrorist free. The government is doing a lot there, but I think some more steps to be taken.
I think the healing
touch. We need some more.
You know, it's they have been isolated, you know, the students in,
see,
in
think,
various
I
universities.
What I want to point out at the ground level, what is happening in Kashmir. Yes, I agree that, you know, our entire concentration has been knocking out terrorist figures. We have never looked at the attack. What is being done to these creation? What is the new method which Pakistan is adopting? It's no longer Lashkar-e-Toyba. It's no longer Hizbul Mujahideen. These were conventional terrorists. They've introduced Jaish. And what is Jaish? Jaish is cultivating these so-called suicide bombers. My fear in Kashmir is what happened day before yesterday. I hope it's a one-off event. I fear this should not become a trend.
Okay,
that's what we've got to watch out.
Can I just look? There'll be a time.
One little point I want.
There's a time to come. I think we should have a lot of discussions around Kashmir and what needs to be done there. But I just want to keep the idea to just get this discussion focused on immediate steps and what is going to be happening with Pakistan. Now, for example, I just want to come back to the FATF, which I was just talking about, because the Federal Action Task Force, which is coming up next week, if India can get Pakistan put onto the blacklist out there, then a large amount of concerted actions are possible. Putting economic sanctions on Pakistan in some form or the other may not be as dramatic as a surgical strike, but at the end of the day, it's their most vulnerable area. So if you hit Pakistan where it really, really hurts, and economically they can really, really be hurt right now, that's when you can force them to take to come. How many of you agree with that, by the way?
I agree with the gentleman, the Israeli gentleman. It should be a multi-pronged effect.
Okay.
You know,
of them, yes, certainly. Economy is something that is going to hurt them. Their foreign exchange reserves are down to 6 to 7 billion. They can't pay the installments of their old loans. So this is going to be a very strong action if they're put under sanctions.
But sir, if I can ask you, all of this theory of what can happen with sanctions and Federal Action Task Force, all of that, it all comes down to one word, really. Why does Pakistan think it can get away with it?
Yes.
Why does Pakistan think it can thumb a finger at the rest of the world, thumb a finger at the United States, thumb a finger at Afghanistan, Iran, and do whatever it is doing to India? Pakistan thinks it can get away with it because it believes that it has the support of China.
Yes.
Let's face it. It does all of this because it thinks that China is going to continue to support it. So the last question that I would like to put to all of you is, what can India do to tell China that, look, if you really
all right, we know you're a big country, you're a very powerful country, maybe we can't coerce China in the manner that it might be possible to coerce, let's say, Pakistan. But at the end of the day, there has to be something that we can tell the Chinese that you can't go on. The people who died out here, in a sense, they died because China's not willing to rein in Pakistan.
And not there even is a factor Muslim.
There,
okay,
there is a factor there. If you see the pattern, the 2001 attack on the parliament was when American troops were involved in Afghanistan and Pakistan was supporting them. Even now, there is a certain pattern because the American diplomacy in Afghanistan with Taliban is being now midwifed by Pakistan.
So when Pakistan thinks that the Americans need them, they think it can mess with India.
And they immediately go and attack India. So there's a pattern there.
But does India have any leverage with China right now? I mean, given the US, China, trade war, other issues, does India have?
Trade war, that is the only thing bringing us closer to some extent. You know, second thing, he's right. You know, ever since, Pakistan was engaged by the Trump administration, the army has become emboldened. More attacks have started taking place in Jammu and Kashmir, and this one is the last. Third thing, Pakistan has also managed to carve out a role for itself in containment of Iran. So Saudi Arabia and UAE are supporting coming to Pakistan to contain Iran.
There's
and American
one more
also
factor
want, you know,
which you have to. You're not making the cost prohibitive for Pakistan to do some action. Apart from these, I have another suggestion. Okay. You can target such water. Because once it knows that its water can be targeted, then...
You're not suggesting repealing the Indus Water Treaty.
It's a threat. No.
By the way, releasing more water to Pakistan than the treaty says.
Why don't you link a canal, leave the last 1 kilometer balance, and say, give a threatened being to Pakistan,
And why not?
We can do that.
The only slide issue with that is don't give ideas to China.
Brahmaputra. Indus Water Treaty is a United Nations guaranteed agreement. It's not
a bilateral. But we're releasing more water to Pakistan than we're supposed
to
under the treaty.
What we can do, we are not utilizing the Indus water, which is
available. Can I just pause all of you? Let's just get an expert voice in from Michael Krugman, of course, one of the top thinkers on South Asia. In general, whom I just booked, who's just sent us this particular message on what he thinks India should do right now. Let's just listen into what Michael Krugman has to say. Okay, you were saying something while he speaks.
So what I'm saying is also that, of course, international pressure on Pakistan. Another thing is we also should look of preempting. Now, when Syria was strong, Hezbollah was there, Israel preempted. You know, what went wrong internally also, we need to look into it.
Okay, Michael Krugman, we do have his comment right now. Let's just listen into what Michael Krugman has to advise.
Well, Vikram, naturally, it would be politically untenable for the Indian government not to respond in a muscular fashion. However, for all the talk about what type of force or use of force the Indian government may resort to, there are diplomatic options. I'm not of the view that India could actually succeed in isolating Pakistan from the world. That simply is not a reality, given Pakistan's relationship to the Chinese, among others. But you look to how the Indians could try to talk to the Chinese and talk to the Americans and see what they could do. Clearly, the Chinese and the Americans are of one mind in being increasingly concerned about Pakistan-based terrorism. The United States, because of its tough position on terror, the Chinese, because of their strong need to build out the Belt and Road Initiative in South Asia, in Afghanistan and Pakistan. So, why couldn't New Delhi go to China and see if there would be any more inclination at this point for them to push to get Masood Azhar designated at the UN? And why not try to go to the U.S. and see what the U.S. would be willing to do to sanction Pakistan in ways that would not affect Washington's very strong desire to get Pakistani assistance in trying to negotiate an end to the war in Afghanistan? It's a very delicate dance for sure, but I think that India does need to try these diplomatic efforts as well to try to put more pressure on Pakistan.
All right, those are really interesting ideas. Might be a time to talk to Pakistan. Well, I'm going to have to leave it there just for a couple of minutes. We're going to take a quick break. And then after that, what today was really about was also an outpouring of emotion as a nation said farewell to those who died, those who were murdered at Pulwama. We're going to turn our attention to that farewell when we return after this break.
Twelve soldiers from Uttar Pradesh died in the Kashmir attack. Across UP, massive crowds gathered at their homes and led processions for last rites. In Unnao, 35-year-old Ajit Kumar Azad left behind two young daughters and an unfulfilled promise to take his family on a vacation to Kashmir, a promise he had made just a week ago before returning from leave.
The 12-kilometer-long journey of Ajit Kumar Azad, one of the soldiers killed in Unnao, has just about ended here. Important thing to reflect right now are these huge crowds that have come in here to bid farewell to Ajit Kumar Azad. He leaves behind a family who he promised to actually take on vacation to Kashmir. That promise, of course, won't be fulfilled.
Sanjay Sinha had recently been transferred to Nagaland, and before leaving, he told his family that this was his last journey to Jammu on his way to Nagaland, and he promised that he would take a break to find a suitable boy for his daughter.
सब राजनीतिक दल मिलके अब भारत के उत्थान के लिए उग्रवाद से को मिटाएं ताकि हमारा फोर्स शहीद न हो.
Little did anyone in Sanjay's family realize that this would be his last journey ever. Entire villages came out to pay their last respects to Rohitash Lamba as his mortal remains made their way by road to his village close to Jaipur. Rohitash had come home only last month to see his newborn son for the first time, and little did he know that this would also be his last visit. Heartbroken, his friends remember him as a man who motivated others to join the army.
हमारे तेरे दोस्तों का ग्रुप था हमारा क्लासमेट थे तेरे लड़कों का हमारा ग्रुप था उनमें आठ आर्मी में लग गए दो सीआरपीएफ में दो टीचर बन गए मैं तैयारी कर रहा हूँ तो दोस्त हो रहे हमारे.
A huge outpouring of grief as entire villages have turned up here to pay homage to those who died in the terror attack in Jammu and Kashmir. Like 25-year-old Rohitash Lamba, who came here just a month ago to see for the first time his little newborn baby boy. Jeetrat Gujar from Bharatpur, who motivated other youngsters in the village and told them that the army and the armed forces are a good career option. And people like Hemraj Meena from Kota, who had just a few years left before he retired. Their stories will now remain unfinished and untold.
48-year-old Maneshwar Vasumatari had served the CRPF since 1994. His village remembers him as a soft-spoken person who always took pride in serving the nation. He's survived by his wife, daughter and son. He told his villagers that soon he's going to take a transfer to Assam, but that was never to happen.
हमारे साथ बातें करते थे, गांव में जो कुछ भी काम होते कभी-कभी, तो इसमें शेयर करते थे. ऐसे तो सादा-सादा बहुत सरल है, और सभी लोगों के साथ मिलजुल रहते थे.
जवान बबलू सांत्रा of the 35th Battalion is survived by his wife, 4-year-old daughter. And mother. Bablu called his mother to inquire about her well-being before leaving in the convoy from Jammu. The 38-year-old was supposed to take voluntary retirement next year after completing 20 years of service in the force.
আমার মনে হয় না যে এইভাবে কোনো সলিউশন পাওয়া যাবে। এদিকে আমাদের কোল খালি হয়েছে কত মাইল ওইদিকে হবে এবার। এখানে যে যুদ্ধটা যুদ্ধ পরে যদি আবার শুরু করা হয় তাহলে শুধু ওইদিকের হবে না এইদিকেরও আরো কিছু সংকট হবে।
Babli Shatra's wife feels war is not the answer.
there'll be a loss. Mothers will lose their sons on both sides of the border. But there are many who feel this time round there is no other option.
The remains of Martyr Sivachandran were laid to rest with state honours at his hometown Kargudi in Tamil Nadu's Ariyalur district. Defence Minister Nirmala Sitharaman paid her respects. The martyr leaves behind a pregnant woman and a two-year-old son who wore a military attire that his dad gifted.
Defence Minister Nirmala Sitharaman was here to pay her last respects. In fact, he leaves behind a pregnant wife, a two-year-old son who is wearing a military attire his father had gifted, not knowing that he would never see him again.